Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about oil and gas, and specifically the fact that Russia has now announced that it's seizing full control of the Sakhalin 2 development, which was previously a joint venture between Gazprom, Shell, and two Japanese companies. So in this video, I'll go through exactly what that announcement says. We'll have a look at the history of this development, because when it was built, when it was first constructed, Russia had absolutely no experience in oil and gas and outsourced the entire project to two American firms, a Japanese firm and a UK firm. They did all the hard work and built it, and now ultimately Russia is seizing control of it. We'll also talk about what happened in 2006 when Russia took majority control of the project. And then we'll also talk about the situation with regards to Japan. The Japanese Prime Minister has recently come out and stated that a price cap of around 50% of market value may be applied against Russian oil. And in response to this, Russia has now announced that it's seizing control of this major asset, which was 22.5% owned by Japan. Then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of all of these actions will be for Russia and the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, and also to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube's membership and super thanks, as well as Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee. Sakhalin Island is located off the east coast of Russia and is situated north of Japan. In 1992, following the breakup of the Soviet Union, Russia put out a tender contract to develop oil and gas facilities on the island. This contract was won by two American companies, Marathon and McDermott, as well as Mitsubishi, the Japanese investment company. Later that year, the UK company Shell joined the consortium. The project faced a number of challenges, particularly because the island is so far north that the waters freeze over for large parts of the year. In addition to this, there was no existing infrastructure in place to be able to move all of the oil and gas back to the mainland. Due to the challenges and delays, the two American firms decided to exit from the project, and an additional Japanese investor, Mitsui, joined the consortium. At that stage, Shell had a majority 55% shareholding in the project. The development was heavily criticised due to the potential environmental impacts of developing in the area. And despite the fact that the consortium had invested a reported $20 billion, the Russian authorities threatened to close everything down unless 50% of the project was sold to the Russian state-owned Gazprom. The investment partners had no choice but to agree to this, and the project eventually opened in 2009. Today, Sakhalin 2 is one of the world's largest integrated export-orientated oil and gas projects, as well as Russia's first offshore gas venture. The project infrastructure includes three offshore platforms, an onshore processing facility, 200 miles of offshore pipelines, 1,000 miles of onshore pipelines, an oil export terminal, and a liquefied natural gas plant. The first oil cargoes left the export terminal in December 2008, and the first LNG cargo started its journey to Japan in March 2009. During its construction, more than 25,000 people worked on the project. The facility itself is huge, being equivalent in size to five world-scale projects. It's located in a hostile subarctic environment and covers a vast area in a region with almost no existing infrastructure. Two 500-mile-long pipelines, which take oil from the fields in the north of the island to the ice-free export terminal in the south, traverse mountainous terrain in an earthquake zone and cross more than 1,000 watercourses, many of which are ecologically sensitive. Now, as I mentioned a few moments ago, Shell was actually the designer and the leader of this whole project. So this was effectively a Shell deal. And it's reported that it cost around $20 billion to construct. And Shell originally had a 55% shareholding. So that would indicate that Shell had invested somewhere in the region of $10 billion into the deal. In 2006, as the project was coming towards the later stages of the development, the Russian authorities threatened Shell with complete closure and a full loss of their investment unless they sold 50% plus one share, so effectively a controlling interest, to Gazprom, the state-run gas business. Shell obviously had no choice but to agree to the deal, and it was left with a 27.5% shareholding in the venture. The site has proved to be very profitable and provides around 4% of the total export market for LNG. Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Shell came out and announced that it no longer wanted to have any dealings with Russia and that it was exiting from all of its investments. And this included the Sakhalin 2 development. In terms of exiting its stake, it was announced in May that Shell was in discussions with an Indian consortium to buy out the 27.5% holding. Vladimir Putin has now signed a decree under which Russia will seize full control of the Sakhalin gas project. The order creates a new firm which will take over all rights and obligations of Sakhalin Energy Investment Company, which is the company in which Shell and two Japanese businesses, Mitsui and Mitsubishi, hold just under 50%. Under the terms of this arrangement, Gazprom will keep its original stake, and the other overseas shareholders are expected to ask the Russian government for a stake in the new firm within 1 month. The Russian government will then decide if the other shareholders will be allowed to keep their stakes. If they are not permitted to keep their stake, the government will sell their stakes and keep the proceeds at the special account of the shareholder. Proceeds from this account can be sent to the shareholder or used to repay unspecified damages under the production sharing agreement. Prior to this announcement, the Shell CEO had said that the company was making good progress in its plans to exit from the Sakhalin Energy joint venture. Mitsubishi and Mitsui have made no comment on this situation, however, the shares have fallen on news of this loss. Now, the timing of this announcement is really interesting because there was a recent G7 meeting at which all of the leaders discussed the possibility of imposing a price cap on Russian oil. The seven countries involved in the G7 are Japan, the USA, Canada, France, Germany, the UK, and Italy. And whilst the USA, Canada, and the UK have all placed an outright ban on the purchase of Russian oil, the other countries are struggling to do so because they have such a high dependency. So they came up with a concept of capping the price of Russian oil. And the way that this would be managed is that there would be a limit in terms of the insurance that would relate to the cargo going on the ships. So the value of the oil could not be above a certain level. And effectively that would apply a cap to the price of the oil because of the volumes involved. Now the discussions are still ongoing, so nothing has been agreed and there is no official announcement in terms of the price of the cap. However, the Prime Minister of Japan was recently quoted as stating a 50% reduction on the price of all Russian oil. And this went down really badly in Russia. Russia's former Prime Minister and current Chairman of the Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, responded by saying that Japan would have neither oil nor gas from Russia, as well as no participation in the Sakhalin 2 LNG project. He went on to say that if the G7 tried to enforce such a cap, there would be significantly less oil on the market, and prices could rise to between $300 and $400 per barrel. Following these announcements, it was later announced that the decree had been signed, removing all of Japan's ownership in the Sakhalin 2 project. Japan imports the vast majority of all of its energy requirements and obtains around 9% of its LNG supplies directly from Russia from the Sakhalin 2 project. So there are concerns within Japan now. If Russia refuses to carry on with those deliveries, it will leave Japan short of energy and could lead to potential blackouts. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, what we've seen here is really interesting. It's no surprise that Shell have lost their ownership. Shell came out very early after the Russian invasion and stated that they wanted nothing to do with Russia and they were looking to exit from all of their investments. And the Sakhalin 2 project is well developed now. It's got past its teething trouble. It's now maximum capacity. So it's a good time to seize that asset from Russia's point of view. They did a similar thing back in 2006, but that was really just gamesmanship. What they did, they enticed in the American companies and Shell, got them to use all of their expertise to set up a really difficult and really big facility at Sakhalin. And once it was almost operational, the Russian authorities then changed the rules of the game, threatened to close the entire thing down unless they were given 50% ownership. So Shell had no choice but to agree to that. What could they do? It was on Russian land. It was Russian law. It's Russian authorities. It's no choice but to agree to the terms and carry on and suck it up. So the warning sign was already there for Shell. But I guess at that stage, they'd already invested about $10 billion. So they had to keep going. And over the last 10 years or so, it has been profitable for Shell. Now, following their announcement to exit from Russia, they tried to sell their shareholding to an Indian consortium. And the news was that that discussion was going well and it was looking likely to go through that deal. However, what we've just seen announced by Russia has killed that stone dead. And there are some interesting implications for that, because we've been talking a lot on the channel about the possibility of Russia teaming up with India and China. They are the two obvious markets for Russia to sell its energy products into. They can replace all of their lost sales from Europe with those two markets. That's the theory. And if you're following that thought process through, the next logical step would be to ask China and India to invest, to become joint venture partners in these projects, and that would cement the relationship. However, what's just happened here, where the Indians have been doing due diligence and have been looking to get involved in this project, they have now seen at close quarters what can happen when you get into bed with Russian companies. They can change the law, they can pass new decrees, they can wipe you out overnight just by saying you're no longer allowed to have ownership. As simple as that, no other reason needed. So I think that is going to be a huge deterrent to both India and China. I'm sure both countries would be happy to buy cheap oil because it's ready and available and they need it. But in terms of investing into Russia, in terms of getting into a partnership with them, I don't think what they've just done was a smart move. They should have waited for the Indian consortium to become part of the deal and then maybe struck some sort of deal with them going forward that took the Japanese companies out. By doing what they've just done, it really sends a warning sign to not get into these sort of arrangements. Because if you do, it's at your peril. If they change their mind, if they decide they don't want to deal with you going forward, they'll just change the law and you're out without any compensation. And it's interesting that China haven't showed any interest in getting involved in these projects. They've not been rumoured to be looking to step into Shell's shoes or anybody else's shoes. And I think there's a bit of a power struggle between China and Russia. I don't think China wants to be seen as second fiddle to Russia in any of these deals. And the way that Russia have handled this situation will really not help them in terms of attracting any Chinese investment in the future. Now, the situation with regards to the Japanese involvement is also really interesting. Japan is located very close to Sakhalin Island and it wants to keep buying the LNG. So it didn't come out and say we want to exit our positions. The two Japanese companies were very happy to carry on with the status quo. So there hasn't been any push factors from the Japanese side. However, the Prime Minister has come out recently and started talking about this oil price cap. And my bet is that that annoyed President Putin and all of the other senior officials in Russia, and they wanted to send a warning shot across the bows for Japan to say, do not try to do that because we will take action against you. And by seizing all of these assets, it's removed billions of dollars of investment that the Japanese have put into that project. But in terms of the long-term implications of this, Sakhalin Island is a really complicated facility. It's got a lot of challenges, climate-wise and also where it's located. And now that Russia have cut all of their ties with the other countries, they're on their own. They need to make sure that they've got sufficient technology and expertise to be able to keep that facility running at maximum capacity. And it was interesting that in the press, one of the senior officials has said that they needed to cut out the investors because the capacity had fallen at Sakhalin Island. Now, if that's happening now, it could well happen going forward. And without the specific expertise and technology, there is a real chance here that this facility could start to go backwards in terms of the amount of output it's delivering. So I think Russia have potentially been a bit short-sighted in their approach to this. They're burning their bridges, they're cutting their ties, they don't need any help from anybody. But if they start having operational issues and the capacity falls, then they may live to regret this decision. But what this does show is that Russia are not making decisions on an economic basis. They're making calls based on political ideas. And it's therefore likely, I think, that they may make more uneconomic decisions going forward. So maybe they will stop selling oil to everybody. Maybe they will switch off all of the gas to Europe at some point in the very near future. It would cost them billions of dollars, but they don't seem to care right now. They seem to have a different agenda. And that's really bad news for the global economy, because all of these actions are likely to lead to higher costs and are likely to lead to more inflation and a major global recession. We're seeing it already, and I think by the end of 2022, financially, the world will be in a much worse situation than it is today. So hopefully you found this video useful, informative and educational. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up. And if you'd like to see more videos like this, please subscribe.